This is episode 124 of Drunk on Comics, brought to you by InkWhiskey.com.
I'm kind of sad that my costume's not going to be ready in time.
Yeah, well, I'm kind of happy because I'm opening a beer with the new official Drunk on Comics bottle opener from the Fat Lantern. Dominic, have you seen this yet, Tony?
Nice. Yeah. New York City.
Yeah. Dominic sent this with my girlfriend when she met up to hook him up with one of the Ink Whiskey flasks. And yeah, he gave this. And then also, we got our first fan letter.
Are you going to read it on the air?
Yeah, and I'm not going to do it right probably either because like he wrote this kind of like the Fat Lantern or the Green Lantern Fat Lantern thing. So it says, "Dear Drunk on Comics dudes, you are the Drunk Lanterns, and this is, for you, the most powerful weapon in the universe. With this, no brewski shall escape your sight. Let those who worship Miller Lite beware the Drunken Lantern's night." Oh, might. Sorry, I can't. I told you I can't read. I'm drunk. Anyway, P.S. Never stop doing the Drunk on Comics podcast because it's my favorite weekly comic thing. Love, Dominic the Fat Lantern.
You know, when I first read it, I didn't quite realize that was all rhyming and it was like the Green Lantern slogan. Yeah. So that's even more awesome that you read it and I could hear with my ears.
You're not going to hear with your asshole, so that's probably good. Yeah, so I think we should frame our very first handwritten fan letter.
Yes, we will frame it with the most perfect of all frames.
Yeah, we'll find one. We kind of almost need to find a Green Lantern
frame. Maybe try to find that.
Actually, I know a place where we can get some.
All right.
So, well, maybe not those, but maybe. Otherwise, we'll just get some stickers and put Green Lantern stickers on the...
Bedazzle it.
Ooh, yeah. So, anyway, this is Drunk on Comics, your weekly podcast. It's not ours. It's theirs.
Yeah, it's everyone's.
Yeah. Your weekly podcast where we talk about comic books and sometimes conventions and collecting and industry news and other nerdly nuggets of fun. Because Tony likes nuggets.
I do like nuggets now.
Speaking of things that you like, I went back and I was listening to some older episodes, particularly the one really drunk one, mm-hmm. Like the really, really drunk one, and I forgot the fishy.
Well, that's only around Lent time when they come out with that, so.
Yeah. Yeah, the
I went on for weeks about that.
Oh, yeah, so.
Anyway. No, that's fucking stuck in my head, thanks.
Yeah, well, you were the one that kept...
McBites.
It's kind of fun. I do want to give a couple other quick shout-outs before we get going, because I forgot to last week with all the fun of having Jason Westlake and Cosmic Casey here. I forgot that I had a couple little things I wanted to mention from New York Comic Con. One was the Fat Lantern keychain bottle opener, which works wonderfully. And then there's just a couple other things that got picked up for me there. I got my plastic 3D cowboy from Ryan Brown.
Nice.
And then there's something else that will be coming in a little bit later. I'll talk about that. And thank you to Chris Miskevich for sending one of the, what do you call it, the New York Comic Con variants of Thomas Alsop number one. There's a bunch of other cool things in there, too. So, and I know I'm forgetting people. Cena Grace for, I had to get the Seth the Moose cover of the last issue of Burn the Orphanage because our shop didn't have it. So, got that. So, lots of thank yous to lots of people out there. And if I forgot you, I apologize. But I drink too much. Anyway, should we get things kicked off with off the shelf here, Tony?
Yes, and I'll start just because I feel a little less inebriated than you. So give you an extra 5 minutes to sober up while I start my review.
Guess what I'm going to do? I'm going to drink more.
This will be even worse. No, I picked up a book that is timely. It is, you know... one for the ages, Ghostbusters Ninja Turtles crossover.
All right, I'm down with this idea.
Okay, I love any type of crossover.
Did that come out this week?
Yeah, just came out number one. And crossovers are great because usually, especially if it's two properties that you enjoy, finally they get to meet up and do what they always do, where they'll battle each other and then make up later and get married and have kids and all that stuff.
Oh, yeah, because, well, it's always like, oh, you're bad, let's fight. Oh, I mean, let's be friends.
And, you know, within different universes, there's always team-ups and everything, but true crossovers, the best ever, and I mean, usually it's always within the same publisher. You know, you rarely see outside publisher doing stuff. Archie's done it a little bit more, which is always great for those ones, and usually you got to take it from not continuity-wise because, you know, the shit that's going to happen crossover is going to affect it, the different properties somehow. He-Man did it, though, and that kind of went in continuity with He-Man. I'm not sure about the rest of the DC universe. The best ever was the whole Marvel versus DC back in, I think, 90s was when it happened.
That would have been probably around 94.
Yeah, and they had two of them. They had the first one, and then they had another one.
The amalgams were probably one of the most fun parts of it.
Yeah, and that's never going to happen again. Like, I don't even know how the fuck they had it happen then. But that was probably the biggest of all crossovers. So, young listeners, go look those up because that was a fun, fun story.
Yeah, it was. And it was definitely, you know, they definitely evened it out on that one, too, where it was 50-50 split on Marvel winning fights to DC winning fights, which is bullshit because some of them you're like, there's no way.
Yeah.
But anyway.
This story, haven't been reading Ghostbusters, but I have been reading Turtles. However, I am a little behind on that. But it does seem how they set this one up that it is continuity-wise for both stories, which is always great when you can kind of have this as an extra thing, but it's overall going the main story that's going on with both books. This is written by Eric Burnham and Tom Waltz. Three different people did different pages because you had the Ghostbusters team drawing their stuff, the Turtles team drawing their stuff, and then later on the Turtles kind of get transported in the Ghostbusters world, spoiler alert, and obviously the Turtles are drawn in that style, but art by Charles Paul Wilson III, Corey Smith, and Dan Schoening. Now, how this crossover takes place, I guess it goes back to the other X-Files crossover that happened a couple months ago. Yeah, it doesn't seem like that really happened. Because in that world, the X-Files, the Turtles, the Crow, all of them seemed to be within the same universe. You had the Lone Gunman going to each one of these properties and interacting with them. Within this, you have the Turtles world, and you have the Ghostbusters world, and through the power of magic technology, a spatial portal that Donnie made, they get transferred into the Ghostbusters world. Now, the whole story kicks off with kind of a little recap of what's been going on and who these people are. But it starts off in the Turtle world, where it's talking about, like, thousands of years ago, there were powerful immortals that, you know, ruled the Earth. One of those characters, this fox-type girl, Kitsinu, has been a prevalent person within the Turtle world. However, her brothers and these other demons back in the day, one of them got banished. Kind of just a small background story to kind of get to where the bad guy is going to be coming from. Because once the Turtles who were trying to... step back a second.
Who's drunk now?
Shut up. How they end up going to a different dimension was so cheesy comic booky that it just made you laugh and go, of course, that's how it would happen. So they were trying to go transport into the lair to surprise Splinter because they already saw that the technology works and it was not meant to go to different dimensions. It was meant to just kind of teleport, you know, stuff. So they're going to quick go do that, scare him, and come back. Well, while that's happening, a fly's buzzing around and the good old doctor there is trying to swat at it. And I believe it was Mikey Araf that goes, this never ends well, like seeing the fly. And, of course, the fly goes kind of by the switch that says do not touch. The doctor swats it right when they're going through the portal, which then made them transport. So it was one of those really cheesy, funny, of course that would happen type moments. And that's how they got transported into the Ghostbusters world. While doing that, they let the mortal guy out, and he's kind of the bad guy now. Overall, there wasn't much interaction to the last page of the Ghostbusters and the Turtles, but you know something's going to go down where they're going to start thinking these are demons or these are some sort of mutant-type, you know, ghosts. And so that's where I'm seeming that there's going to be a crossover. I'm assuming that Donatello is going to probably be all geek about, you know, the proton packs and everything and going on there. But time will tell when the next one comes out how this goes. But
my guess is that ectoplasm is actually the ooze.
Oh, that could be a good, that could be a really good idea.
Yeah. Yeah.
So like I said, overall, the story really set the tone. It let you know who the bad guy was. It let you know how they first met up, and now it's going to go from there. And even some of the Ghostbusters scenes when they first went there to kind of introduce those guys, I don't know what's going on there, but they set up and had some key dialogue of, well, remember that thing that Venkman made of, you know, to let us know if a spatial, you know, dimensional breach happens. I go, oh, that's kind of convenient that he has that, because then ding, 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 the buzzer goes off when the turtle's space dimensional transport. So
it's like that guy that I played D&D with in college. He's like, oh, yeah, I have a special ring that won't let that happen to me. Oh, well, where, you know, because I didn't. I was new to it. But, you know, the DM's like, well, where's your paper that says you have that? Hold on, that's in my room. And then you come down and be like a brand new piece of paper. Hey, you fucking liars. Anyway.
So, yeah, like I said, it really, really good. I'm glad I picked it up. And, yeah, that's that.
All right. Well, I have a story that is exactly like that, but nothing at all like that. In fact, there is nothing like that. That sounds happy and fun, and this one's not.
You got a sad book? Comics are supposed to be funny, haha.
I have a disturbing book.
Oh.
Yeah. This is
You've been on a disturbing book trip lately.
Well, it's Halloween time, so, you know, it's spooky time. this is Mimetic, issue 1 of 3 from Boom Studios.
What was that?
Mimetic?
Mimetic.
Like memes?
Oh, okay. I was thinking it was like a memory medic or something, doctor. Like,
well, it's actually about memes.
Okay.
This is
a disturbing book about memes.
Yeah. I was going to have you read this one, and then I was like, you know what? I would rather kind of get your take on the ideas here. But little credit here first. James Tynion IV wrote this. Eric Donovan did the pencils and inks, and colors were by Adam Gazowski, and letters by Steve Wand. Tony, I'm gonna kind of have you peek through this here, and actually, I'm gonna start here with this image. Let's see if it's in here all the time. Good Time Sloth. That's Good Time Sloth. Have you seen Good Time Sloth?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I have.
Okay, you've seen it floating around recently?
Yep.
All right, now in this book, basically what they've got going is this image pops up on like Reddit at like 7:04 in the morning, and the thing spreads like wildfire. For whatever reason, when people see this image, the weird colors and stuff make them feel really warm and happy inside. And they have to keep looking at it. They have to keep showing people. And people basically are turning into zombies, like social zombies. You know, kind of like how when you go to a college campus and you look, and not a single kid has their head up. They're all looking down at their phone, mm-hmm. just moving. It's kind of like this. People can't stop looking at this.
Okay, do they explain it in a way of where it's like a coded, like, you know, message when you're staring at it, that you're seeing it, like the technologies make it, or like, is it the picture itself is magical, where if it was just a picture printed out, you would...
Even if it's a picture printed out.
Okay.
It still does it. And they actually do explain in here, like, that. Well, they try to explain. They have, like, scientists and doctors looking at this, trying to figure out, and they're like, there's nothing inherent about this image that would cause people to feel this sense of euphoria, but we all feel it too. Now, the only kid that doesn't feel anything is a kid who's colorblind.
Oh.
And so here's where things start to get a little like trippy, because as it goes on in here, it's like 24 hours after people see the it's either 12 or 24 hours after people first see the subject, all of a sudden they start bleeding from their eyes, start screaming, go insane, and start killing people.
Oh.
Yeah, not a happy book.
No,
not a happy
book. Is it just this one image, or are there other images that make
other things happen? It's just the one. It's just the Good Time Sloth. And the thing is like...
That doesn't sound good time at all.
Well, that's kind of the whole catch of it. So, there's a couple things. Like, it basically, this book starts out on day three, and you see, you know, you see the young hero, I guess, you know, Aaron, who's kind of our person that we see everything through. He's the kid with, he's colorblind. Mm-hmm. Now, he also has some sort of hearing problem. He does have a hearing aid. I don't know if that's going to play into things later or not. But you see, like, you know, day one, he's walking, and or day three, people are dead in the street, cars are crashed, the places are burning down. Day one, you know, everything's bright and shiny and normal. But what I liked is that there's all these little text messages and tweets and things that Tinian put in here, that you see people walking around, but you see them all kind of glued to their phones. And I think this is a nice commentary on, like, on culture, the social commentary, saying, put your fucking phone down and look up, you know. Now,
except for if you're listening to us.
I was going to say, after you're done listening to our podcast. But, you know, it's just nuts, because you think about the way that people communicate and how memes get spread around. And there is a lot of commentary in here, too, on how the majority of information these days is now spread via memes. Like, quote-unquote, facts are spread via memes. And younger generations don't necessarily actually get real news. They just get little tidbits. They get opinions. And they take that as fact and news. And so I was like, okay, that's pretty cool. There's a lot going on in this book as far as good character development. There's an old military CIA guy in here who is losing his sight. And because of that, he hasn't seen it. So he's going to be a key character in here.
Okay.
There's a scientist who she studied, and they actually kind of talk about this in here about, weren't we trying to, you know, wasn't the CIA using stuff like this about, you know, trying to get people to...
subliminal messages and stuff?
Yeah, to use it for, like, mind control and all that. The interesting thing in here is that, like, there is a depiction of Barack Obama in here. And they're interviewing him on TV, and he's like, yeah, I saw the image. You know, my daughter showed it to me before she went to school this morning, you know, kind of thing. And then he's giving a speech later saying that in order to stop spreading the image, they're shutting down television, internet, everything. Wow. Because they can't afford
it. Wait, so if he saw it, then he's going to...
And while he's giving the speech, guess who starts bleeding from the eyes?
And they actually had him as the president? Because sometimes, usually in comic books, you don't have the actual political figure now. Oh, yeah. Wow.
Yeah, it's him. Yeah. So that's kind of the one thing that kind of surprised me. But, you know, so Aaron, the one girl, Sarah, who's like his best friend, she saw it. And, you know, and they all of a sudden are catching on that it's 12 hours after or whatever. And he, like, this book kind of ends with a couple different things. And one of them is her basically realizing that there's 45 minutes left before she's going to become a screamer. So really, really solid book. The art in here was a very interesting style. Let me show you the artwork. Because besides the Good Time Sloth, which is such a great picture, this almost has an animation style to it, but yet it's scratchy. And I like that it's clean and it's not, and I can't fucking explain it. And I think that's one of the reasons why I really dug this book was, you know, the overall appearance of it. The colors worked really well in it. you know, the panel layouts were fucking beautiful.
See, trying to, I'm just trying to think of a way that I could get out of a fictitional scenario if I was in it. And yeah. I'm just thinking I would, like, induce myself in a coma. Hopefully maybe that would make me not kill people and do stuff. And
then stop taking your insulin?
Yeah, and then and then maybe a Cure meme would come out and look at that, and then everything would be good.
Yeah, like Bad Times Bunny. Bad Times Bunny cures Good Times Sloth.
I can see that.
Yeah. So, no, I definitely recommend picking this book up. I mean, like, this was – you and I kind of talked earlier on in – you know, earlier this week, and I was struggling as to what I was going to review because there wasn't a lot out there that I was like, man, this is great, or what else was great. I feel like I've talked to death, and there really wasn't anything new I could say about it. So I was glad this came out. Once again, Boom Studios knocking another one out of the park. So, oh, there are a couple other little things in here. Are you reading The Woods?
Yes and no. It's
one of those. I know you started to, but
it's one of those that I plan on picking back up. I just
you're gonna jump to trades on that one. Okay. There's a little in The Woods now. James Tinney IV writes The Woods as well, and there's a little monkey monster thing in there in that book, which I don't know if you've gotten to. I'm not really spoiling anything, but one of the guys, like, it kind of becomes his little pet. And he calls him Dr. Robot, and like, which makes no sense for that. But one of the fun things is there are a lot of little Easter eggs in here. Like James Tinian's actual Twitter handle is James the Fourth, spelled out. One of the Twitter names in here is James the Fifth. And there's another one in here. Where did it go? But there is one that's like at Dr. Robot. You know, I'm like nice, nice little nod. You know, I thought that was fun. So, you know, just stuff for people that are reading other books, you mm-hmm. know, of his. And, you know, it's, anyway, yeah, just kind of, pick this one up, check it out. You know, I'm definitely impressed. And I think a 3-issue series on this is going to be a really good.
Well, it sounds like it should have more than 3, though. It sounds like really compelling to have like 4, maybe.
This is actually a pretty damn thick book, though. So,
I'm just saying though, like, it, obviously, you know, it's not good to just milk everything, but I'm thinking you could explore a bunch of stuff with just that idea.
Yeah, but you know, I would be fine if somebody put out like a double sized issue and it had everything that you needed. So, you know, I don't know. I'm loving it, and I don't know. I think when it's said and like when it's all done, then we can go back and say whether or not it was the perfect length or needed to be longer, needed to be shorter.
And okay, I'll take back what I said though too, because sometimes just telling the story, it just from what you've said, it seems like, man, there's so much
there could do. Be a lot
more. Yeah, but if they have the story and stuff, if it's only 3 issues, then make it 3 issues and maybe have a sequel. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, well, and that's one thing that Boom's kind of known for is, you know, doing the short series. So, all right, that wraps it up for me.
All right, well, before we get to news, we actually have a Best on Tap this week.
You have a Best on Tap this week.
Yes, and
because I didn't really get a vote on this one. You're like, this is it.
Well, it jumped out at me. I was going to pick up the book anyways, but then when I was looking through the different covers, I was like, fuck yeah, that's the one. I want you. And it is G.I. Joe #2, the subcover. And
subscription variant.
Yeah. It just has a... now I'm blanking on his name.
Is that Cobra Commander?
Yeah, Cobra Commander in a new stylized look, which looks kind of badass, just kind of having the... You know, the old, I can't think of anything.
Uncle Sam?
Uncle Sam, yes. Sorry, maybe I'm a little more drunker than you. Kind of, you know, pointing out and saying, you know, I want you for our team because, as I said before
who's
in the review.
Who's the guy pissing on the wall down there at the bottom?
Looks kind of like a Nick Fury, I don't know. But, yeah.
Who did the cover?
This cover was Steve Kurth.
Oh, nice.
So,
Okay. Cool. Well, news, Tony?
Yeah, we can do some news.
I got a bunch of news. You got any news?
I actually got some. One that I didn't even... I looked up before without telling you.
You asshole.
Yep. So, spoiler came out in the new solicitations for the new Batman that's coming out in January, and they have revealed who the new Robin's going to be in the book.
Is it Damian?
You've read this already?
I sent you a link.
Of this?
Yeah.
Oh, well then, never mind then. It is news that you knew that I didn't know that you knew.
Yeah. Actually, I think I sent it last week.
Oh.
Yeah. We might not have talked about it.
No, I don't think we did.
Yeah. They're bringing Damian back.
Well, this is the thing though that I just want to say with the technology age now, it fucking pisses me off. Sometimes I like to actually read the story to see, oh my god, that's going to happen. Not know, you know, 3 months in advance. Oh, this is going to happen, so I can look forward to that and then read it and be like, oh yay, I already knew what that was going to be.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, that's. I mean, you're talking about this.
Yeah.
This image here. Yeah. Now, here's the thing, though. Is it Damian or is it somebody that just looks like Damian? Now, and then here's the other part. That picture seems to show bullets bouncing off of him.
Well, that's what maybe some people have speculated. Maybe he, obviously, I think the Lazarus Pit will somehow play a role in it because he's dead and that thing brings people back to life.
Maybe it's not Bruce Wayne's kid. Maybe it's actually Batman or Superman's kid.
Could be. Well, that's what I was thinking. Maybe now he's got actual superpowers, so he's going to be the first Robin that doesn't die now because he's bulletproof.
Nah, they'll figure something out. Speaking of Batman stuff, there's 3 more Lego movies on the way.
Yep. I knew they were making the Lego Movie 2 and a Batman 1. I don't know what the other third one is.
According to USA Today, there's 3 Lego films to be released over the next 4 years. And there's Ninjago is going to be up, a Lego okay. Batman. Let's see. And then
it's going to be Lego Movie 2, yeah.
And I don't know what the other one is. So.
Well, you just said 3. Ninjago, Batman, and then Lego Movie 2.
God, we are fucking stupid today. All right. More DC stuff. Actually, I was happy because I'm kind of sick sometimes of the fact that, like, I mean, yeah, I'm a Marvel guy more than a DC guy, but I don't like the fact that there's not a lot of DC news out there. Like, I have to scrounge and scrounge to find anything. This week, I was kind of glad to see that there was some DC news coming out. There's some Catman stuff coming up, and I don't know if they're redesigning his costume or if they're just bringing him back out. But Blue Beetle and Booster Gold, I know we talked about them coming back. That's going to be coming out in December. And I think one of the more interesting things is that back in Batman number 28, Harper Row showed up, and she is now in Batman Eternal number 42 going to take on the role of Bluebird.
Okay. Because I was, yeah, when you just said that name, I was like, yeah, what the fuck ever happened to her?
Yeah. So I thought, I'm like, all right, that's kind of cool. And the design looks fucking awesome on there. What else did you have, Tone?
Well, do you want to buy a house?
You want to buy a monkey? I think we should buy that as our studio. That house. Well,
guarantee I'd actually probably just be going through all the walls looking for anything that was like hidden back in the day. But Stan Lee's house
is not that old of a house.
Oh shit, that's, well, if he just hid gold or something, crazy old man syndrome, dig up the backyard.
Oh, see, I'll definitely be metal detecting in the backyard.
But his house is currently listed at $3.75 million.
That's nothing.
Yeah, we got that in our bank. That's chump change.
Yeah. Shit, we could probably sell that fan letter from Dominic and just, you know, just go here. Actually, just give it to the realtor and go, here, this is all you need.
Listeners, we're kidding. When we ask for donations, we desperately need them.
Dude, that would be awesome to have Stan Lee's house.
Well, like, just this, yeah.
Yeah, like, I wonder if it's the same house that, that they showed the front door of in Big Bang Theory.
Oh, yeah. Probably not.
No.
Yeah, sure, just film my real house at my location.
Yeah. Okay, did you watch Fraggle Rock?
Yes, I did.
Did you hear that? Did you hear that Gerard Park passed away? Or Gerard Parks?
No, I didn't.
Yeah. I didn't watch it, so you got to tell me who that guy is.
You didn't watch the show?
That, it was on HBO, right?
No. Oh, yeah. It actually might have been, yeah.
Yeah, because, see, I grew up in a little hick town, and we didn't have cable until I was in, like, late high school. So I wasn't going to watch Fraggle Rock at that point.
Okay, so you don't... I thought you liked Jim Henson, though.
I love Jim Henson.
Okay. Well, he's the owner of the house that the Fraggles live under. So okay. He has always been, like, thinking, you know, there's mice or something. And the dog, which is also a Muppet,
and
you
know, chasing. And they're fucking Fraggles.
Yeah.
Damn it. That's smart.
But he was... one of the things, though, he is... one of the biggest, you know, besides Sesame Street, you know, actors who's worked with the Muppets or Muppet type creations the longest. So
okay.
And he's the only one that yeah. So that's sad to hear.
He like it was his 90th birthday was just a couple days prior to his passing, so.
Oh yeah, he also was he was the bartender that had Tourette's in Boondock Saints.
Oh, that's why I recognized him.
What? Damn, that's a total different departure from Fraggle Rock.
Why don't you make like a leaf and get the fuck out of here?
That's one of my favorite lines.
Oh, that's awesome. So, okay, now I am really sad. Well, Darkwing Duck is coming back to comics.
When I saw this, okay... loving old school cartoons and everything and being able to relive my childhood. Most of them, though, eh. I mean, coming to comic book form, like DuckTales is back out, or I've seen, you know, a couple of things. Darkwing Duck, though, was the best because that was like Batman in Disney form.
Okay, and here's the thing. I always thought that Darkwing Duck was a Disney cartoon.
It was a Disney cartoon.
Why does Boom Studios have it and not Marvel, then?
Because Boom still has the right to a lot of the Disney properties still. That's why they've come out, like I said, with DuckTales. That's really the only one I can think of.
Ooh.
I can think of right now. But I think Boom has a long contract with the publishing rights to those things.
Okay.
I wouldn't not think that, if that makes a grammatical sense in what I just said.
Since when did you start caring?
Not really.
Yeah.
Probably eventually all these are going to come over to Marvel, but it may be, too, that Marvel's just kind of like, all right, Disney, you don't need to push all your shit on us and our publishing. Do your own thing. Because it kind of makes a little bit of sense if they're going to have someone else do them for them.
Yeah. Or maybe Marvel doesn't want to venture into the kids' books too much.
Yeah, it could be, too. But this makes my day, because those were some good shows.
Okay, She-Hulk.
Not reading it, sadly.
No, nobody's going to be reading it here shortly. Do you like that one? You almost choked on your beer. She-Hulk got canceled, which I'm going to admit, and I've caught some criticism for this. I was not a fan of the art style, but I'm never a fan of that type of art style. Not saying it isn't good. I'm just saying I didn't care for it. It was a really, really good story, though. And Charles Soule was doing a great job. I know Kevin was reading it. Kevin liked it. But, yeah, kind of sad to see that one's going down. So, you know, if this is something that, you know, that you were liking, you know, send a letter to Marvel and tell them, hey, you know, we need more characters like this. We need more stories like this. So,
One thing that has gotten the internet excited this week is a new trailer for some movie with a giant A.
Assholes?
Yes, Assholes Assemble.
Yeah.
No, the new Avengers trailer just came out, and What's your take on it?
Assholes clench up. The trailer? It's a trailer.
But didn't it get you excited?
No.
Really?
No. I stopped getting super excited over trailers. Unless, like, I think unless, the only time I get excited about a trailer is when I'm in the theater and a trailer comes up and I'm not expecting to see it. And all of a sudden then I'm like, ooh, doggy. Like, you know, it's like, that's when I get excited. But like when it's like, here, watch the Avengers trailer, all of a sudden I'm like, just, it looks good.
Well, so the two things that I'm, well, excited about slash look sweet is what Ultron looked like and how it, in the trailer, if people didn't know, it pretty much is assuming that Tony Stark created him because in the beginning it looked like one of his armors coming out and that being the Ultron AI. But at the end, what he looks like. But then the other one is the Hulkbuster armor. How and why that will come about. Maybe it was something that... Because obviously Tony and Bruce went off together at the end of the last Avengers movie. Maybe he Bruce had said, you need to create something just in case I lose, you know, control.
Or maybe Bruce said, hey, we could get a lot more done if there was somebody else just as strong as me.
True. But that just that scene right there, I'm looking forward to that more than anything.
The funny thing about it is that the trailer, like, you heard that this trailer wasn't supposed to be officially released yet.
No.
Yeah. Oh, you didn't hear about
that? That's why I was kind of wondering why all of a sudden it was
out. Yeah, the trailer got released in the UK. And it was leaked out there because it came, like, the original trailer that came out said, like, April 2015 or whatever. And it's not the same, like, date as when it's supposed to come out here. Mm-hmm. That's, like, the European release date. And so they know that it came out. Marvel's response, because once it was leaked, Marvel had to release it.
Mm-hmm.
And so then they had to release theirs with the proper date and all that for the U.S. Marvel responded with a tweet, which was just fucking awesome. And all it said was, damn it, Hydra. That, I was like... Fuck yeah, that's awesome.
Well, there's more Avengers Age of Ultron footage that's going to air during the next Marvel Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. So,
all right,
sneak peek there.
Speaking of Marvel, most people have referred to them as the House of Ideas, and I have now started calling them the House of Recycled Ideas.
I know we've each week kind of talked a little bit about their new old ideas that they're doing.
And yeah, their new old strategy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the Infinity Gauntlet.
See that one. That one's though a given. Eventually, I mean, they've had multiple Infinity Gauntlets before, or at least with Infinity Gems. That one I can see them redoing without rehashing the same thing, especially if the new
House of M.
That one. What?
That was 9 years ago.
No, actually, no. It could be just going and exploring, just like they went back to Age of Apocalypse, and they have that whole universe going on, and they had a spinoff
series. Was, yeah, but that was like 20 years ago.
Yeah, but...
This is 9 years ago.
Well, some people might want to know what's going on in the House of M
Fear universe. Itself. You want to recycle back to that?
No.
Yeah.
Well, here's one that's even more close than a couple years ago. Let's say last spring, Ultimate Universe, the end.
Oh, yeah.
That's another one that I just saw pop up. So they have, and then they also have, besides the other ones we've said, Age of Ultron versus Marvel Zombies, The Secret Wars, Civil War.
Is it Planet Hulk?
Planet Hulk. They're also doing Old Man Logan, which was a good fucking little mini series within the Wolverine.
Isn't it just Dead Man Logan now?
Yeah, true. And maybe this is where he comes back.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, next summer.
But, speaking of, we talked about it is possible, Tony, that, you know, because you were talking about how he got hit with the molten adamantium.
Mm-hmm.
This is off subject. I don't give a fuck today. yeah. It's possible that adamantium didn't have to be hot to be in a liquid form.
Hmm. Well, it did show steam coming up. Okay, I guess
those could have been gases, not steam.
True, very true. I guess. And who gave you that bright idea? Because I know you didn't come up with that.
I'm smart, you fucker. So, no, like it, and I don't know. Mostly, it was a long
I do think stressor. He needs oxygen, though.
Well, yes, but they've drowned him before, and then when you take him out, all of a sudden he goes. And besides, when he was walking out, he had to have, like, I don't think he could have been holding his breath the whole time. So all he had to do is exhale, and he could have blown a couple little snot holes through the adamantium. So he just kept pushing out, going, you know, he could have that in there. Maybe Kitty Pryde ran up and stuck a little straw in his mouth. You didn't see that. It's all shit that goes on behind the scenes. You don't know.
So. All right. Besides that little tangent, I want to go back to all these random things that's going on. Next summer, I don't think anyone really knows what the fuck Marvel is doing. But it does have me intrigued, but also pissed off. Because, as you said, really rehashing these ideas, I hope they're smart enough than that to actually do something different with them, in which case I'm intrigued. I want to know what it is they're doing. And I'm looking forward to next summer to actually get some more details, or just waiting a couple of months before when they actually tell us before the big reveal.
I decided long ago never to walk in anyone's shadow. You know, if I fail, if I succeed, never. No, I decided I'm done with big events.
Really?
Yeah. I don't see the point. I'm just going to stick to the. I'm just sticking to the comics that I like. Well, and with Marvel, I've slashed so many of my Marvel titles. It's nuts. So I'm like, I'm done.
All right, well, let's throw it this way. What's one thing that you would want them to remake or to announce next? Because obviously you've read events in the past. Is there any one that you think would be kind of cool to retell or redo?
You know, the Mutant Massacre really got me, but I don't think that, you can't do that again. Like, that took so much setup to do.
Mm-hmm.
One that I thought that was just kind of cool, that it was an event, but you didn't have to read all the stories. All you needed to know is that shit was going on, was the Inferno series.
Okay.
The Inferno event. Do you remember that?
Yep.
Where, like, inanimate objects were turning into, like, fucking crazy demons and shit like that. And I just, like, that was one of the craziest books or things going on at the time, because it was crossing over, like, into Daredevil. And Daredevil's just trying to fucking, like, go. Daredevil can't fight that kind of shit, you mm-hmm. know? That was nuts, you know? And that was also, it was a great time because Daredevil was getting his ass beat by everybody. That's when the Kingpin and Typhoid Mary sent everybody up against him to kick his ass, and just fantastic. But would I want it redone? No. No. I would actually just rather they come out with new stories for the books. And don't... I guess here's my problem. Why does everything have to be a fucking event?
And then everything... Yeah, I mean, yeah, everything does go into the event. I mean...
You know, and now the Inferno thing was an event, but the Mutant Massacre was an event. It was actually just a story arc. Days of Future Past, that was a story arc. It was a two-issue thing. You know, the whole Phoenix, you know, the Rise of the Phoenix, Death of the Phoenix, all that, those were part of the story. They weren't events. Why can't we just have a fucking story?
Well, we still do have the stories. I would say I look forward to the events still a bit, because it's one that it includes more than just the one comic book you're reading. It brings more people in.
You can do that and not have it be an event. That's my argument. My argument is that with everything being an event, the downside is that the regular issues hold no fucking weight anymore. That there's nothing good that's going to come out of a regular issue anymore, unless you get something like...
No, because the lead up and the backstory to the event, and then the main books within them...
Yeah, so in the book that I'm reading, I have to have all the lead up and the backstory so that then they can put out a different book that I then have to go buy. And in the meantime, my regular book is just telling stupid backstory shit that in that book doesn't mean anything. Give me a good fucking story in my book and just go about your fucking business. Sell your books that way.
There are some shitty events that have happened. Then I was just actually thinking of the fucking, almost worse than Fear itself. was the lead up to Schism. Oh. That
prelude to a Schism?
Yeah. What's Scott going to choose? What's he not going to choose? I don't know. I think I might go this way. Hey, what's Scott thinking? That was the... I want to tear out my eyes after reading.
You're actually tearing up right now. So, all right.
Enough of that bullshit.
Yeah, that was a fucking rant that was not intended.
Nope.
I should not drink this much before.
So,
okay, wait. Are you watching Arrow?
No, I'm not.
Okay, did you see this link? Do you know what I'm going to tell you? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, so Vinny Jones, i.e. the guy who played Juggernaut in, was that X2?
Yeah, it was.
No, that was X3.
Was it X3?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, because at the end, yeah.
And X3 is joining the cast of Arrow as the villain Brick. So I just want to know, is he going to go, I'm Brick, bitch? That's it. I got nothing today.
Some kind of exciting news is when, a bigger publisher kind of gets, helps out a smaller publisher and acquires things, and it shows that the smaller publisher had some good shit going on in their catalog. Aspen has just acquired Big Dog Inc.'s library.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's good for Big Dog Inc.
Good for Aspen, too.
Yeah. Good for everyone.
Yeah.
More prints of more good stories.
Yeah. Big Dog Inc. has,
Oz the Wicked West.
Yeah. Oz the Wicked West that Dirk did a couple stories. Dirk Manning did a couple stories for. And I'm getting them confused with somebody else. I'm not going to say what other books I'm thinking because I'll just sound dumber than normal today. Although, last news thing I had is DC is talking about kind of doing a revamp for their Vertigo line of comics. Jim Lee and Dan DiDio outlined some ideas, and basically what they kind of talked about is that they've reduced the total number of books at Vertigo, and one of the things that they pulled back on was the original graphic novels and other book format things, and that's something that they want to change. They want to kind of go back to.
Well, is putting out more?
Yeah, but putting out, more of the original graphic novels, like a large format versus just, small. Like, they probably have more titles, but they have less books coming out.
Mm-hmm.
Type of thing. So they're really looking to kind of do a lot of creator-driven type stuff there. So that's going to be, I think, starting in the first quarter of 2015.
Well, that's cool. I love Vertigo, even though it is DC. Growing up, Vertigo was some of my favorite books, just because they were different.
Yeah. So that's everything I had on news.
That's everything I have, too. So let's go down to the Indie Turnpike.
Alrighty. This is something that I told you I was going to kind of bring back around to the start with New York Comic Con.
Mm-hmm.
And I am going to review Tart number 4, written by Kevin Joseph and art by Ludovic Salle. Now, you guys, longtime listeners, and Tony, I know you're going to remember Tart because that was a Kickstarter that we backed,
mm-hmm.
Back in the beginning. And then they did a Kickstarter for number 4. And the publisher on this, and I should have talked to Kevin first to find out, but I'm assuming it's pronounced Catch All Comics, but it's K-E-C-H-A-L.
Yeah, sounds about right.
It seems it's smart, and Kevin Joseph's smart, so I'm thinking maybe that's why he did it. So, and if he pronounces it differently, then he should start saying Catch All. But this is Submerged Part 1, but it's the fourth one, and they did a die cut cover. You can see me through it on here. This is basically the group. There's a group called the Toxic Fruit, and what they do is they go in and out of the time stream fighting demons to protect the world.
Okay, that's cool. I like what they're doing. The name?
Yeah. Well,
that just sounds...
It's one of these kind of fun little things because you've got, they're all different fruit names for the character, which to me is kind of fun because it almost reminds me of like a filthy strawberry shortcake in some sense.
Okay. All right, yeah, if they're going by some code names and all that, then okay, the team name then is acceptable.
Yeah. So, this book is just a blast, and where I had
just can't wait till they battle against Antidote Vegetable, like a man in a wheelchair, like
Stephen Hawking. That's terrible. By the way, Tony, before you keep bashing this, you do realize our name is in the back of this book.
No, I'm not bashing that. I'm bashing the name of their new villains.
Oh, yeah. Which they haven't even had the new villains yet. But one of the things I really liked about this is because they do travel through time, they have to have different costumes. And they have like these magical costume changes in there, which is really awesome. But what's more awesome is I got that fucking page.
That is a pretty nice page.
Yeah. This is what I paid for with my Kickstarter.
Nice.
So, yeah, just fucking gorgeous work by Ludo on this. So, Tart is one of these really fun books. I know, like, Kevin Joseph, the writer, and I talked with Jay from An Elegant Weapon here, well, a year ago maybe, when Tart Volume 1 was coming out,
mm-hmm.
and or had just come out, and we just sat there and we bullshitted about a lot, but like as I remember, he kind of described Tart as Buffy the Vampire Slayer meets Doctor Who. So, you know, it's a fun book, but incredibly well written. You know, even with some silly little names in there, like Toxic Fruit and all that stuff, but these are characters that you fall in love with, and not just because of the character development that's there, but because of the artwork by Ludo in here. Like you actually develop a real attachment to these characters, and that's something that I haven't found in fucking years, where I've actually grown attached to characters that I care about them, that I want to know more. So if you want to check this out, this one here is not one that you're necessarily going to be able to find at a bookstore. If you see Kevin, you know, out at a con, then you can definitely go there. Otherwise, you're going to need to, you can go to K-E-C-H-A-L Comics, KetchellComics.com, and you can get Volume 1 there. And then also, you can get it on Comixology, and they're 99 cents by the issue.
That's good.
So go to Comixology, check it out, and then yeah, you'll enjoy it. So, and I think you might, yeah, I don't know. Just go to Comixology and download it. The one thing too is I was talking to Kevin Joseph, the writer, on it, and he said that he really likes sending people to Comixology because the colors that Ludo put in this book, what he told me when I went and looked, they do pop on tablets. Those colors are just fucking gorgeous. Oh, and one more thing, Tony. Surprises in here. So the other thing I got was I got the hardcover volume of Tart Volume 1.
Yep.
And Ludo did a little picture of Tart on the inside, and she's wasted and says, "I'm a little too drunk." So I thought that was pretty
awesome. She's right there with us.
Yeah. Yeah. But anyway, yeah, this book is a perfect 5 out of 5 for me, which I don't get those often. The art's perfect. The writing's perfect. I'm done drooling over this book, but it's in a sleeve, so it's not getting drool on it. So, all right.
If you're done drooling over that, what are you pairing to get drunk off of?
I thought you were pairing something to get drunk
off of. Oh, was I? I thought you were pairing something to get drunk off of.
Well, that's why we have text messages. All right, so here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to pair Tart Volume 1 with a Dark Horse Raspberry Ale because it's got a fruit name in it, and they're both delicious and sexy.
I can't believe that you were just randomly drinking that. That's a good pairing.
It is a good pairing, and I'm really smart. You fucker, you can't throw those on me. We had a plan.
As I told you at the beginning of the podcast, I've been fucking working my ass off on my damn group costume, and I have not had time.
It's called priorities and responsibilities, Tony.
Yes, and Halloween is so important to me. That's my number one priority. Yes, I failed a little bit on coming together for today. I apologize. But through desperation becomes inspiration, and that was a pretty damn good pairing, so
you must,
I made that happen.
You must look inspiring to a lot of women.
Fuck off.
All right. Do you got anything here for last call?
Besides the already mentioned G.I. Joe, Letter 44, and I have other ones, but I honestly have not gotten to read them.
The two that I didn't read that I'm looking forward to reading, the one Marvel book that I did pick up this week was The Logan Legacy, number two, and because it's got X-23 in it.
Oh, nice.
And then The Wicked and the Divine. I still haven't gotten to read that one yet, but I am looking forward to that. The three other books that I read that I had to mention, there were a lot more that I read, but these were the three that really stuck out that I could have easily picked these to review because they were good enough, but I've talked about them recently enough to where I didn't. Lazarus, number 12, which I haven't talked about that one in a while, so I might bring that one back up here again soon. Mm-hmm. The Walking Dead, number 133, and Butterfly, number 2 from Archaea. If you are not reading Butterfly, you need to fucking go get it. Like, that
is that the one with the mind?
The super spy? No, this no. is the super spy. Oh, okay. Espionage. Oh, yeah,
that one was good.
Yeah, yeah. This is fucking nuts how good this book is. And once again, I had to read it multiple times because there's so much going on. Now that I've read this three times, I'm going to go back and reread issue one again.
Damn, this is the most rereading of books ever.
This is the kind of book that I should probably be taking notes on while I'm reading it, because there's so much. And the thing I like about it is because it's a super spy type thing, is that it's got that, because it's secret espionage and this and that and sneaky, it feels like it's written that way too. Like there's little things constantly being hidden in the story that you have to be a super spy and all sneaky and CIA-ish to go get. I made up a Tony word. Yeah. So, yeah, Butterfly.
I guarantee you, I bet you there's things hidden in some of the pictures and paintings and all of it that you're going to need to re-look at with the magnifying glass to see.
Oh, dude, I've been, like, and I do, like, I go through it. And actually, there are things in the pictures in the background that are important. Like, I mean.
But it's going to make, you're going to see one picture, and that's going to make you need to relook at all the pictures where it may have only been that one picture, but now you're going to be fucking going through with, you know, a fine, you know, whatever the saying is.
Fine tooth comb or a fine young cannibal?
Tooth comb, I think, is the one that I was going for.
Yeah, fine young cannibals for that.
I can't stop what I see.
You know that song.
Yes, but not in the Happy Gilmore voice.
Yeah, that's what he sounded like, dude. He sounded terrible. All right, let's go get wasteder.
Sounds good.
All right, guys, keep reading your comics. We'll be back next week to talk to you more about them then. See ya.
We are so stupid.